Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Welcome to mini episode number 163. We're going to talk about the topic of loneliness with my return guest, PhD, clinical psychologist Guy Winch. Before we get to that interview, I just wanted to read a couple of surveys on the topic of loneliness. This is an excerpt from the Shame and Secret survey filled out by a woman who calls herself Chris, and she's in her 20s. And what, if anything, do you wish for? I wish I didn't spend every day inside avoiding people, avoiding life. I wish I could make things and do things and talk to people. Instead, I just wait for my debt to explode, for my landlord to kick me out, for my mom to reject me. I wait for that injury that makes not having insurance a problem, and for the explosion that will happen once others discover my withdrawal from life. I wish I could just be a normal person and go about my day, running errands, exercising, having friends, working, finishing school, making some art, having some fun. Instead, I'm just an inert zombie waiting for time to pass, trying desperately to make it fly by faster by engaging in perpetual distraction and completely ignoring my health. Well, I'm sending you a hug, Chris. I think there's a lot of people that, and she also isolates and binges on food and porn. And just want to remind you that you're not alone. A lot of people battle those things, and isolation is super common with those of us who are in pain. This is from the Shouldn't Feel This Way survey, and this was filled out by a woman who calls herself Anastasia. She is in her 20s, and she writes, "I'm supposed to feel free living on my own and not with my emotionally incestuous and emotionally abusive borderline mother, but I don't. I feel terrified, petrified in my loneliness, abandoned, like I could die right here in my big empty apartment and nobody would even know until the neighbors started complaining about the smell. I'm supposed to feel thankful that for all my loneliness, I at least have one best friend who knows all of my struggles and can sympathize since she's been through similar pain, but I just feel like the worst person in the world when I tell her how I feel because I feel like I'm dragging her down with me, even when she insists that she wants to be there for me. I can only hate myself that much more for being this great big black hole sucking the life, energy, and happiness out of everyone and everything around me, and then I feel like a self-centered fuck for thinking that I could make that much of an impression or dent in someone else's life when really I'm just a pathetic, inconsequential waste of space." Wow, you have out-hated yourself. You have out-hated my hatred of myself and the hatred of many, many, many people who have filled these surveys out. You, to me, that is so clearly, to me, sounds like the residual effects of having an untreated mother. who I'm sure manipulated and browbeat you and gaslighted you. And it's going to take some time to undo that stuff. And let your friend love you. Believe your friend that your friend wants to be there for you. You know? Sending you a hug. This is from the Struggle in a Sentence survey, and this is filled out by a guy who calls himself Southwest Singapore. And there's a new question I added to this survey, which says, give us a snapshot moment from your life that highlights one of your issues or struggles. And this isn't really a snapshot that he gave, but I thought it was worth reading. He says, I feel weak, insignificant, like a failure, and angry at the same time whenever I log on to Facebook, but I can't stop. I cannot tell you how many people have an addictive, abusive relationship with Facebook. And I know a lot of people who have started giving it up. And I encourage you, you don't have to give it up forever, but take a break from it and see how that feels. Because so many people have such a view it through the lens of social competitiveness. And I don't know. My two cents. And then I want to read this last one before we get to the section with Guy. And this was from the Shouldn't Feel This Way survey filled out by a woman who calls herself AS, and she's 26. She writes, I'm supposed to feel grateful to have a job, but I don't. I feel resentful and depressed about having to spend 40 hours a week bored, hurting my wrists and eyes through computer usage so that I can afford to come home to my apartment and do nothing because I'm emotionally drained from working 40 hours at a job I don't like. I'm supposed to feel happy or relieved to be away from my emotionally abusive ex, but I only do sometimes. Other times I feel sad, lonely, wish I could have been what he wanted, wish he didn't look down on me, wish he still loved and respected me. I'm supposed to feel good about being single and, quote, free, but I feel lonely and sexually frustrated and worry that nobody will ever truly love me without my having to pretend I'm someone else. You know, the thing that leapt out at me when I read that was about your emotionally abusive ex. Understand when you're with somebody who is emotionally abusive, the game they get you to play is to constantly try to be somebody that you're not. That's how they derive their power from. You could never. See, guys like him are afraid of emotional intimacy. And to avoid having to look at that in themselves, they project their anger and their dislike of themselves onto other people, and they have you running laps around them, tap dancing, trying to be everything they can be, so they don't have to look at themselves. It's a drug. It's a drug to the person who's being manipulated and to the person who's doing the abusing. So find some friends that you can get honest with, and that's Guy Winch is going to talk about relationship muscles in this, and that would be a good place to put on your relationship training wheels and start creating some healthy templates for relationships. Or go fuck yourself. Either one. I'll leave it up to you. Let's catch up with Guy Winch. We've talked previously about rumination, about rejection. What's another large issue that people deal with that you have some tips for?
So another big one is loneliness. And loneliness, by definition, is a subjective experience. It's not about the quantity of friends you have. It's about whether you feel a certain amount of emotional or social disconnection. And people can be married but very, very lonely, and people can seemingly have a lot of friends but feel very, very lonely. It's entirely subjective. The problem with loneliness is twofold. Number one, it really impacts us psychologically and behaviorally. And number two, it has a whopping impact on our physical health. They did one study, for example, in which they looked at college freshmen, incoming freshmen, and they were giving them flu shots. And as part of the questionnaires they give out, they were asking them, do you feel lonely? Which a lot of times college freshmen do. But then they saw that the college freshmen who claimed they were lonely had much poorer responses to the flu shot than the non-lonely college freshmen. Because one of the things loneliness does is it depresses our immune system.
Really?
Literally. It depresses our immune system. It puts us at risk for depression. In later life, for Alzheimer's disease, for a more rapid progression of Alzheimer's disease, for cardiovascular disease. And when scientists looked at, well, all these health risks, what they found was when you look at them, it actually cost us years of our lives and longevity. Lonely people live less long than non-lonely people with the same health profile, number one. And number two, they concluded that chronic loneliness poses as large a risk to our long-term health and longevity as does cigarette smoking.
Wow.
As much as cigarette smoking. And cigarette packs come with warnings from the Surgeon General. Loneliness does not.
What a great point. So what are some tips and tools for people who are experiencing loneliness and they don't know how to get out of it?
Well, first of all, it's indeed very difficult to get out of it. There's a certain trap that loneliness presents, because when you're emotionally withdrawn or when you're socially withdrawn, then you start to not use certain skill sets. You're not using your social skills if you're socially withdrawn or isolated. You're not using your empathy and sympathy and supportive listening skills if you're, you know, in a marriage but you're emotionally disconnected. And those skills atrophy with time. When we don't use them. And the other thing that happens is that lonely people tend to evaluate their friends and their friendships as less desirable than they actually are, than how they would have evaluated them if they were not lonely. So there's a big self-fulfilling prophecy that happens with lonely people. They are convinced that people don't want them, that they won't be desired, that they won't be wanted. And so they approach people with a certain amount of suspicion, with a certain amount of distance, with a certain kind of vibe that actually pushes people away. And then it self-reinforces. You know, I'm not going to go to that party because I won't know anyone there, so I won't go. Or if I do go, no one will want to talk to me, so I'm going to park myself right here by the hummus and the vegetable dip and scowl. And sure enough, no one's talking to me.
That's so true. It's so true. And I have acquaintances, and I suppose friends like that, who are just, you can see them caught in this cycle, and you can tell them they're great, personable people. You know, you can meet them for coffee, and, you know, sometimes it'll shake them out of it a little bit, but it seems like ultimately they need to take charge of it. Like, they can't be caretaken and pulled out of it. They need to make the decision to say, I'm in a cycle. I need some new habits. I need a new change in my consciousness, even if it feels phony at first. Almost like going to the gym, of saying, I don't want to go to the gym, but I'm told this is good for me, so I'm just going to do it until my body feels more invigorated.
You're absolutely right. It is a little bit of fake it till you make it at first. And the thing is that it's very, very difficult, because you really are convinced, you know, and number one. And number two, you really don't see that you're pushing people away. You do not see it. I did this one radio show where people were writing on the Facebook page of the show, and they were giving me those questions during the show. And one person actually, when we were talking about loneliness, and one person actually, they read from the Facebook page, I have trouble meeting new people because I'm just in no kind of circumstance in which I can meet or can communicate with people who feel like me. When you're on the Facebook page of the show with 100 other people who feel like you. But he couldn't see it. He could not see it because he was like, no, there's no one who feels like me. Just, it's Facebook. Your name is on there. So is the name of everyone else. You can friend them right now. But it's just the blindness. You know, it's just so hard to see.
Is it because we're always searching for an identity for ourselves, and they've latched onto that, and so that they're looking for things to reinforce the identity that they've given themselves?
In part, but it's also because you feel so emotionally raw. So to put yourself in a situation where you might actually try and friend someone and they'll say no, you know, you become very risk averse and very rejection averse. And the best way to protect yourself from rejection is to not put yourself in that situation, which is what you have to do if you're going to come out of the loneliness.
And vulnerability is so frightening.
So frightening, number one. And number two, you know, if you have the flu and you're in bed for a week and you get out of bed for the first time, your legs are going to be wobbly and you're like, ah, my muscles are weak. I have to strengthen them. It'll be very clear to you, yeah, they're weak. I didn't use them. But if you haven't dated for 3 years and you go on a date, those muscles are going to be weak too. You're going to be rusty, probably not going to go that well. But when it doesn't go well, you're not going to conclude, boy, my dating skills are rusty, I need to keep doing this in practice. You're going to conclude, see, I am undesirable. And that's wrong. It's your skill set.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So any other tips for how to deal with loneliness?
So the first thing is you really have to accept that you are doing things that are not helping, and you have to have an open mind about it. It's the most difficult thing, because you really feel in such pain that you feel like, no, I mean, now I'm to blame as well. You're not to blame. This is what happens when we're lonely. This is a psychological response our brains and our minds, you know, have to loneliness. So you're not to blame per se, but yes, you are doing something that you need to do differently. If you're going to call a friend who hasn't reached out to you for a month, don't call and say, you know, I haven't spoken to you in a month. Call and say, hey, let's have coffee. Now, it might be really difficult to put on the smile in your tone of voice and say, hey, let's have coffee, when you're sitting there annoyed, like, hey, you haven't called me for a month. Why do I always have to call you, etc., etc.? But that's the fake it till you make it. Put on the smile, say, hey, let's have coffee, and they'll be much more likely to do it.
And know that you're just strengthening your emotional legs.
I call it the relationship muscles. You need to strengthen the relationship muscles.
What are some other tips?
So another thing about loneliness, and this is one of the, you know, there are a lot of bad things about loneliness. I don't mean to scare people, but I want them to understand that it's really dire, that you need to take action. Don't just succumb to it. But it's contagious, it turns out. When we look at social networks, and you track social people over time in social networks, lonely people get pushed to the periphery of those networks, and the people closest to them get pushed out as well. Loneliness is a stigma, and that's why when you're coming across negatively, you're stigmatizing yourself in that way. You are coming across as too needy or too suspicious. You're labeling yourself as, you know, the stakes are too high. And you're usually doing that in a casual situation where the stakes shouldn't be that high. That's why it's important to fake the smile, you know, fake the hello. You know, I said to people, you know, how many friends do you have on Facebook? Oh, 200, and none of them will have coffee with you? How many people are in your address book or in your email address book? It's just not possible that you're not, you know, but if you just feel they won't, so why reach out? Indeed, they won't. So you really have to check those self-defeating prophecies.
It would be great if people could see 30 seconds of their face in social situations and see what they're presenting to the outside world.
That would be amazing. Is there a way to do that? That would be so good.
I don't know. Maybe have lonely people meet each other in a casino and have the pit boss then go and get the film.
Okay. They would have to be facing the cameras. But, you know, another interesting thing about loneliness, you know, since lonely people find these kinds of interactions stressful, even the casual ones. They did one study where lonely people who were housebound, and they gave them three kinds of visits. They gave them a visit from a volunteer who came to sit with them and talk with them, a visit from a volunteer who brought a dog, and a visit from just the dog. And then they asked them who they would like to be visited by again.
The dog.
Of course the dog. Now, the thing is, and I don't know, by the way, if they said to the volunteers, yeah, you know, you came in second to the animal that likes to lick itself and drink out of the toilet. But I don't know. I hope they didn't. But it's the dog, because you're not stressed out about the dog. You're not worried about what will they think of me? What will I have enough to say? And you are thinking about those things when your relationship muscles are weak and rusty.
So what is that, a way for that person to ease in, or is that just used for them?
Accept that you need to strengthen those muscles. Your first few dates are going to be bad.
Okay.
You know, like, you know, when you go on
interviews. Not that you should date a dog in the beginning.
Well, but then they might be good. Yeah. But, you know, if you're going on job interviews after a very long time, go on the one you care about least first. Get that out of the way. Kind of, you know, get into it a little bit. And same thing with the dates. Go out with the ones you're not that interested in first. Get some practice.
What a great idea. What a great idea. Your tools are so helpful, so pragmatic, and so simple.
Yes.
I'm really glad to have you as a guest on the podcast. I think the listeners are going to get so much from your advice, and I encourage them to get your book, Tools for Emotional First Aid, or just
Emotional First Aid.
Emotional First Aid. And your website is guywinch.com. Any other tools for dealing with loneliness?
I think those are the main ones. I mean, there are a few others in the book, but I really, it's a leap of faith. You know, it's bravery, it's a leap of faith, and it's a decision like, I'm breaking the cycle, because you are caught in a cycle.
And something else that I would add to it, because it has saved my life, is trying to imbue my life with a sense of meaning and purpose. And it is impossible, for me at least, and people I know, to get a sense of meaning and purpose without connecting to other human beings.
Yes, because actually, you know, it's hard to find that on an island. I mean, I'm serious. In other words, meaning and purpose is by definition about people. And so that connection is vital.
Guy Winch, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Guy. And we've got three more installments coming up in future mini episodes. The next one will be on failure. Wouldn't it be ironic if I failed to put that one up? Not really, Paul. The one on that, after that would be low self-esteem, and then after that, guilt. And I've invited him to come do more because the feedback we've been getting has been really positive, and I'm glad you guys like them. So I just want to read a couple more surveys, and then I'll send you on your way. Then you can put your gabardine jacket back on and go go down to the local donut shop, and as Andy Kindler would say, and a third thing. This is from the Shouldn't Feel This Way survey filled out by a woman who calls herself Laura, and she's in her 20s. What would you like people to say about you at your funeral? Mostly, I would like to hear them recount memories, but not of big events that happened in our lives, graduation, weddings, or anything like that, but of small moments, like us sitting around, and we had a nice conversation, and I said something that was memorable, or we shared a beer and had a nice time, anything like that. I often think about people in these small moments and the things they've said and done, but I'm terribly afraid that people don't think about these kinds of moments about me. Also, this sounds very selfish, but I just want them to keep talking about how much they will miss me, but only sincerely. I constantly feel like if I just completely left people's lives, not necessarily because of death, they would not miss me at all. There's a bit from the film 127 Hours that put it really well. Just after James Franco's character has met two girls who invited him to a party and has left, one of them asks the other whether she thinks he will come to the party. The other girl replies, "I don't think we figured in his day at all." That is exactly how I feel all the time. Like I don't figure in people's lives at all. I'd like to see people talk about how much I figured in their lives, even in small ways. How does writing that make you feel? Mostly it makes me incredibly sad that I won't actually witness any of this, even if it happens. And in real life, I'm too scared to ask people to tell me these things, even though it would probably not be so bad. You know, I can tell you, the friends that I've made as I've started healing and doing my support groups and all that stuff, I do have those kinds of conversations, and I do try to tell people how much they mean to me and memories I have of them and moments that I think about. And sometimes when one will come up to me, I'll just text somebody and say, "I'm just thinking about you," or "I'm thinking about that, you know, that time we laughed." And you can have those. You can have those. She writes, "I'm supposed to feel loving about my younger brother and want to help him become a better person, but I don't. I feel resentful." Then, you know, I say, then take a break from it. "I'm supposed to feel all right about not having a boyfriend, but I don't. I feel incredibly lonely and worthless." How does writing that make you feel? "It makes me feel a lot better, like I'm finally confronting these feelings." "You think you're abnormal for feeling what you do." "I know that logically I'm not, but just emotionally and in my head, I feel abnormal every time I think these things." "Would knowing other people feel the same way make you feel better about yourself?" "Much better." Well, take my word for it, Laura. Lots and lots and lots of people feel exactly that same way, and I'm sending you a hug. I haven't decided if I'm going to do it through the post office or UPS, though. I've been spending a lot of money sending hugs via UPS. And you know what? I'm getting resentful at it. So, fuck you guys. You know, fuck. I just realized there's monthly donors that support this show, and they fund that. I take my resentment back. By the way, can I overstate how much I'm hating this bit that I'm doing? I cannot. But I'm not going to rewind. This is from the Shame and Secret survey, and there's just a couple of sections of this I wanted to read. This was filled out by a guy who calls himself May As Well Be Alone. Darkest thoughts. "I often fantasize about my entire..." Oh, and he is 20. I often fantasize about my entire family and friend circle dying or otherwise leaving me. I've never been seriously abused by my family or friends, but I feel like I may as well have been an orphan who grew up with no friends. I feel like no amount of talking to people, even professionals, could get them to understand the whirlwind of confusing, terrifying, and sometimes life-threatening thoughts that go on in my mind. I feel as if life would be easier if I was a complete loner, because suicide and or drug addiction would be much easier for me. I want my life to be short-lived, with moments of drug-induced highs before ultimately overdosing, and I think it would be best if no one knew me when this happened, because then the pain I live with can't be passed on to them. What, if anything, do you wish for? I wish for a life where I didn't crave love and acceptance so much. I wish I didn't care that the people who were once so important to me are no longer a part of my life. I wish I could enter into a coma and wake up 5 years later and start a completely new life. It breaks my heart, that line. I wish for a life where I didn't crave love and acceptance so much. Don't. That's your humanity. That is the part of you that you should try to keep alive. Because once we stop wanting love and to be seen for who we are, that's when life loses its luster. Even in my darkest times, I still have always held on to wanting to love people and wanting to be loved, and I'm grateful for that, because sometimes I think that's helped keep me alive. It's given me something to kind of reach out for. So I don't wish to lose that. Boy, my dogs are really they're showing up on this episode. They're digging the carpet. Which is that? Is that Ivy or Herbert? Oh, that's Herbert. Herbert's got a cone on his head, by the way. Oh yeah, dig it up. Why should you be quiet? Why should you be quiet in this 20-minute section I'm recording in, completely quiet the last 4 hours, but flick that mic on and oh. Have you shared these things with others? I have only told these things to professionals, and their response is mostly asking me to think rationally about whether or not my problems would go away if these wishes were true. I don't know how to respond to that, but I think they missed the deeper problems that I was trying to convey to them. How do you feel after writing these things down? Like there's a lump in my throat. Like I'm stuck in this mindset, but I also feel hopeful that maybe one day I'll meet someone who can love and accept me for thinking these things. I could tell you there's a gazillion people out there that would love and accept you for thinking those things. And sounds cliche, but I hope you can get to a place where you love yourself, and then you get into a relationship and you got love to give to that person, as opposed to trying to love yourself through them, because that can be kind of a dead end. Oh, I know, Herbert. This is all very exciting. He's been having hot spots on his ass, and he doesn't care for it. That's why he's got the cone. Oh, yeah. I'll be done in a minute. He's fucking looking at me. This is Herbert. Can I read one more survey? I'm going to read one more survey. I don't care what he says. Hey. He's giving me the stink eye. This is from the Happy Moments survey, filled out by a guy who calls himself Miles O'Pain. And this is the Happy Moments survey, and he writes, I am a recently divorced 41-year-old dad who has also been financially destroyed. For financial and childcare reasons, I share two bedrooms. I share a two-bed... Herbert, you're fucking me up, buddy. Should I kick him out of the room? For financial and childcare reasons, I share a two-bedroom trailer with my parents. One weekend, when my kids were here with me, I was laying in the bottom bunk I share with my 6-year-old son. My insomnia and depression were battling it out. I stared at the bunk bed above me, unable to stop the tears or the thoughts that I couldn't go on. My son shimmied down the ladder from the top bunk and hopped in bed with me. He put his arms around me and said, "I love you, Daddy." I was so elated to hear my son say those words. I wasn't the least bit disappointed when his next words were, "Can I play Angry Birds?" That's awesome. Thank you for that, Miles. And thank you guys for listening. And I hope you know that you're not alone. And loneliness is a motherfucker. I think Ben Franklin said that. All right. See you Friday.